sadly, I should mention that the humanitarian situation in South Sudan is widening, it is spreading, and indeed it is deepening. We now do have more needs in more locations than ever before. This is a real tragedy of monumental proportions. I should mention that civilians in particular continue to bear the brunt of the unfortunate conflict that we do have in this country. Women and girls in particular have been disproportionately affected, including by assaults such as sexual and gender-based violence. I should also say a word about children, because children truly represent the future of this country. Children face particular risks. Presently, our statistics show that nearly one in every four schools has been either destroyed or damaged or occupied and indeed or closed. We have about 1.7 million children who have no access to education in this country presently. And less than half of all primary school age children are now in school. I really think this is an unfortunate development because, as I said earlier, children do represent the future of this great country.
Yes, and as you described the humanitarian situation there, just this week, at the beginning of the week, famine has been declared in some parts of the country, that's especially in Northern Unity State, and it was described as a man-made famine. Can you just explain for us that briefly?
Certainly. If you look at the situation in this whole country, the conflict is man-made. I mean, let's start with that, and I don't think we should mince words about that. The conflict, indeed, is man-made. And the consequences of the conflict we've seen in many, many forms. The displacements of large numbers of people, the IDPs, refugees that indeed we do have, the economic decline that we are all contending with, the impact on children, as I said earlier on. You know, these are all consequences of a man-made actions, which is really the conflict that we do have in country. Now, in terms of specifically, in terms of food insecurity, and that's the point that you are making.
Mm-hmm.
We are presently dealing with multiple and interlocking factors that have created severe food insecurity in South Sudan, and some of this has to do with the conflict itself, active hostilities. Of course, some of it also has to deal with climatic change, and some of it is also the result of the economic decline that indeed we are dealing with. Now, the food security situation as a whole in South Sudan has actually been deteriorating, and we've seen the trend over the past couple of years. And the trend has just been exacerbated again by the intensity of conflict. On the declaration of famine, this is localized famine, I should say. And we are talking of about 100,000 people who are facing famine in central, the former Central Unity mm-hmm. State. I think a major part of this is the result of a lack of access in that part of the country. That lack of access, again, is the result of active hostilities. It is also a result of access denials that have confronted us humanitarians on a number of occasions, and also some of the bureaucratic impediments that indeed we have to deal with. I should also mention that it is also the result of occasionally attacks on humanitarian workers. In the past couple of months, we have been compelled to relocate most of our humanitarian workers out of Central Unity State. And I dare say on this program that but for that relocation, which we're compelled to do, but for that relocation, we might have averted famine in that particular part of the country. So it's absolutely important that humanitarians do have access. It's absolutely important that humanitarians are facilitated so that we're able to deliver services to those who are in dire need in this country.
Yes, and now that famine has been declared in that part of the country, and you describe the humanitarian situation, how does the United Nations plan to respond to this crisis now that is happening?
Well, again, I go back to what I said earlier. We must remember that the crisis is purely man-made, you know, so it requires human intervention, certainly, to deal with it. Of course, except a drought, that the impact of drought in some of the low-populated southeastern parts, you know, of the country bordering Ethiopia, Kenya, and Uganda. But if we look at central unity, as food insecurity and nutrition has drastically escalated, certainly in most parts of the country, the humanitarian response is facing, I should say here, is facing funding, is facing access, and is facing logistical challenges. And we need to overcome this in order to be able to scale up. And so, therefore, while the food crisis represents an unprecedented challenge to us, the situation can be mitigated. And I'm saying this emphatically. The situation can be mitigated and at best prevented if humanitarians are able to immediately deliver large volumes of combined assistance, including food, including nutrition and health services, in order to curb the excess mortality that we do see in that part of the country. And again, it is hereby, and I say this again, it's imperative, therefore, that we are granted free and unhindered access to all populations, and here in particular to the populations at greatest risk in central unity, so that we are able to bring immediately life-saving assistance to the large numbers of people who are in need. I mean, if I look at the counties of Koch, Mayendite, and Leer, there are about 340,000 people who live there right now. And the evidence we do have is that about 80% of them are severely food insecure. Mm-hmm. And we can do it. And we need to be facilitated by the authorities. We have the capacity, we have the experience, we have the pedigree, we do have some resources to scale up, but we will have to do this in partnership with government. There's a role that government and local authorities will have to play. And if they do play their role, which I hope they do, we will also play our role and bring relief to the large numbers of people who are food insecure in that part of the country.
Yes. Now, and does the humanitarian or the United Nations anticipate the food situation to improve, or actually it's, you know, assumed to become worse?
Well, if I go back to the IPC, which is the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification Report, which we launched on Monday this week. Mm-hmm. Right now, we have 4.9 million people who are severely food insecure. And the projection, unfortunately, is that at the peak of the lean season, which will be, I believe, around July, the numbers will go up to about 5.5 million people. So that doesn't look particularly auspicious. That doesn't look particularly favorable. But I should say that if the security situation was to improve in certain parts of this country to enable displaced people go back home to till the land, then clearly we have opportunities, you know, to improve food security, certainly over the short term. But I should also say over the short to medium term, because what humanitarians are doing right now is dealing with the consequences of a problem. So in the short term, yes, we will scale up our humanitarian assistance, but this country needs to go back to basics. We all need to go back to basics and begin to deal with some of the underlying drivers that have created food insecurity in this country.
At the moment, of course, the famine has been declared in Northern Unity State. Is there a danger that this might as well be experienced in some parts of the country?
I still go back to, there is a risk. I wouldn't say there is a danger. There clearly is a risk. Again, if I go back to the IPC results, and here I should say the IPC results was done by a consortium of partners led by government. You know, the National Bureau of Statistics was at the forefront of this. If I go back to the IPC report, the IPC report clearly says that we do have 80 to 100,000 people facing famine right now. And we do have about 1 million people who are on the brink of famine. So yes, there is a risk. But we also do have an opportunity. And the opportunity that we do have right now is for me, is very simple. It is working together with all partners, you know, at the national level, at sub-national level, providing the access that we do need, the intimidation and harassment of humanitarian workers. Indeed, if that were all to stop and access was granted, and indeed, with the support, general support of our donors, we will be able to mobilize all the required assistance to really pull the people who are on the brink away from the brink.
South Sudan has been experiencing this humanitarian crisis since 2013, when a lot of humanitarian organizations and donors pouring in. Now, with donor fatigue all over the world, I mean, let's say how much is needed here for South Sudan, and can that money really be gotten to solve the problems or to avoid this hunger situation or food insecurity in the country?
I'm extremely delighted that you have raised this point, because we need to understand that we are dealing with a very constrained financial environment when it comes to resources. And then unfortunately, we have multiple crises all over the world at this point in time. You know, we have the Central African Republics of this, we have the Yemen, we have Syria. Iraq, we have Syria. Tremendous competition for resources, and there's a limited pot of resources clearly available. So we do face a competition, clearly, for resources. Last year, in our humanitarian response plan, we did appeal for $1.3 billion US dollars. I think we were fortunate to have received $1.1 billion US dollars. And that made us one of the best funded humanitarian appeals, certainly globally. This year, in our humanitarian response plan that we launched yesterday, we made it very clear that there are 7.5 million people who are in need of assistance, and of this we're going to target 5.8 million people, and we will require 1.6 billion US dollars. I should say here that the HRP that we do have is strictly prioritized, because we want to focus on those who really have acute life-saving needs, life-saving imperatives. And for that reason, we are prioritizing assistance to 5.8 million people. This is the 1.6 billion that I spoke about is the barest minimum that we do require to be able to provide assistance, including protection assistance. And I must say that I'm cautiously optimistic, but it's going to take a lot of effort on the part of the humanitarians. It is also, quite frankly, going to take some changes in behavior, and also some changes in the environment more broadly, positive changes, to enable us mobilize these resources. Because, yes, there is a sense of donor fatigue. Mm-hmm. But what makes it even more difficult for us here in mobilizing resources, because I went to a couple of donor capitals last year, and they made it very clear that South Sudan is a man-made crisis, and they cannot continue to pour indefinite resources into South Sudan. We need to go back to basics and find a political solution to the crisis that indeed we do face.
Great. You called for humanitarian access to all these places. Humanitarian organizations should be given full access. You call for a political settlement of the current situation so people can be able to go back to their homes and cultivate. Now, if this is not done, if this did not happen, what scenario are we likely to see?
I'm not a purveyor of worst-case scenarios, but of course, worst-case scenarios can indeed be a reality. I think I want to be hopeful. I want to be hopeful for a couple of reasons. One, when we launched the humanitarian response plan yesterday, there was a lot of positive messages from the Minister for Humanitarian Affairs in terms of government support to the humanitarians when it certainly comes to access and some of the bureaucratic challenges that indeed we are dealing with. And I believe in the State of the Union address by Excellency the President yesterday, he also did state a commitment to provide free and unhindered access to the UN and all humanitarians. And I want to take them up on their word. So I'm hopeful that if they're able to be able to translate words into action, because at the end of the day, as the English phrase goes, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. If we're able to translate words into action, then I'm hopeful that we will be able to avert a worst case, setting a worst case scenario. But of course, that is also contingent upon humanitarians getting the resources that we need to be able to respond.
Great. Just before you go, if there's some key messages that or priorities that you'd like to pass to the government and the humanitarian terms in South Sudan, what could that be?
Well, if I'm supposed to say, let me say two things. One is that the fighting should stop. I cannot say this enough. We need to silence the guns. The people of this country have suffered for far too long. And the guns need to be silenced to provide the unfortunate people of this country the opportunity to live in peace, the opportunity to live in prosperity, the opportunity to hope, certainly, for a better future, and the opportunity to live a life of dignity. I cannot say this enough. The fighting should stop. The guns need to be silenced so that people can go, those displaced can go back home and live a life of dignity. And the rest of the population who certainly have not been displaced to have an opportunity to certainly live in prosperity. So that is my very first message. My second message is that, yes, we do now have a crisis on our hands. We do have the humanitarian crisis, including the famine that we urgently need to respond to, and all the enablers will have to be in place. And again, here, I'm making a strong appeal to all those in authority to provide humanitarians free and unhindered access to all populations who are in need. We have the experience, we have the capacity, we have the capability, we will be able to alleviate the sufferings of large numbers of our brothers and sisters in South Sudan. But we need the authorities to help us so we can also help the people who are in need in this country. It's all about access. It's all about the safety and security of humanitarian workers. If these enablers are in place, I think we will be able to alleviate the sufferings of large numbers of people, and we will be able to save many, many lives in this country.
Mr. Eugene, thank you so much for joining us in Mirai Studios. We really do appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. It's a great pleasure to be back on the show.